welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. Hope everyone out there is doing well. A late week edition of a show here for me, being a lot going on. As you can see, I am in a different setup than traditionally. I just moved over the past few days, so this is kind of my new office that is coming together slowly but surely for anyone watching this on video. Of course, if you're listening on audio, you cannot see this, but you know, give it some time. Visit us on the video side and I'll have a little more thorough of a setup here. But as I said, a lot of moving around caused a bit of a later show than planned this week. Also, our guest got a bit delayed. Former UFC middleweight champion Chris Weidman joining the show, and he is in Houston serving as a desk analyst for this UFC Fight Night 267 event on Saturday, headlined by Sean Strickland versus Anthony Hernandez. Chris had a little bit of delays from his vacation in Jamaica to making it to Houston, so that pushed our planned recording time back a little bit, but we got it done and we put together a great show for you guys, not just talking about Houston, but a lot of the other MMA news going on right now. A six pack of topics that I called it here. That I presented to Mr. Weidman, that we went over some stuff relevant to this Houston event, the middleweight division, which obviously is hugely impacted by the result of this fight, and then, of course, many other items going on over the past few days since I last had a show that I want to touch on. So that's what we did for today's episode. Hope you all enjoy. Thanks for sticking with us. Thanks for being patient and waiting for this episode. Some great insight from Weidman, as usual. So I will take a quick break and be right back. Chris Weidman. Back here on the Bonfire Podcast with former UFC middleweight champion Chris Weidman, one of the perfect people to talk to on a fight week with a middleweight headliner, Chris. But a lot I want to go through with you. But first of all, how's Houston so far? I know you haven't been there long. Canceled flights. Was probably straight to the hotel room and to bed, right?
Yeah, it was crazy. Well, that was the plan. So I was leaving Jamaica the night before. My flight got canceled. And then I had a flight out of there early morning, so we had to stay over the night again in Jamaica. Woke up, took the flight, went to Miami, went to Charlotte. From Charlotte, came here, got in like last night around like 9 something. And then I was going to go to bed. I have no suitcase with me. I have no clothes at all, but I do have an awesome team. My Vayner Sports is out here. My girl Sarah, she went shopping for me. So I got some new t-shirts and stuff that I'm sporting, some underwear and socks. And the UFC brought suits for me because I left some suits in Apex. So I'm here with nothing other than new stuff. So it's crazy. And then last night, the goal was, to get some sleep in. But Dan Helly and Bisping were in the lobby and they're like, come hang out. And then next thing I know, I went upstairs, showered, and then 2:30 in the morning, back in the room. And I'm like, crap. But it was a good time. It was good hanging out with a bunch of people. Got to see Rose, a bunch of the fighters on the card and stuff. It was cool.
Yeah, it's always trouble with Bisping. You're never gonna make it out early.
No, you are right about that. Yeah, it was fun. It was a good time.
Nice. How'd Jamaica treat you? My wife's half Jamaican, so we go down there from time to time.
Oh, get out of here! Yeah, that was my third time going to Jamaica. I love Jamaica. The place that we stayed at, probably we won't be going back there, and I'm not going to say their name because I don't want to kill them, but yeah. It wasn't the best. But it was great being there. I love the culture. So it was good. I had fun there. I like Jamaica.
Nice. And how's the Paramount era treating you so far? We saw you do the desk for 324. You're back at it for this one. You'll be on site this time too as well.
Yeah, it's been fun. It's been a good transition, I guess, for retirement. I don't feel like, it's been tough for me because I'm still involved with the sport and around the fighters. So I don't feel like I really retired yet. Plus, there's always that possible boxing match waiting in the wings with like an Anderson Silva, that keeps me my mind kind of where I'm always at anyway. And I've had so many damn injuries that I'm used to that taking time off. So I just feel like nothing's really changed besides I am transitioning over to doing TV work and being retired for sure.
Yeah. Do you think you picked it up well? I mean, I know they're hazing you a little bit posting when you're putting your feet up on the desk and stuff, and it seems like it's such a great environment. And I don't know, like, has the adjustment to, I guess, just like knowing all the kind of behind the scenes stuff people don't think about when they're watching the television that you know have to know how to do.
Yeah, no, it's a little trickier than you would think at first. You know, the goal is to try to just be yourself and relaxed and talk fights and have a good time, which I like to do. And I think I could be good at that. But sometimes when you have like rehearsals and it's a little bit more structured, you know what you're going to say already before you say it. So you're trying to memorize the thing that was already in your head as opposed to just speaking off the cuff. It could get, you know, mess you up. So I'm getting more comfortable. It is fun, it's challenging, and I like it so far.
Yeah, and a great desk crew for this one as well. Yourself, Dan Helly, Alan Jouban, and Dustin Poirier. So that should be fun.
Yeah, let's go. Yeah, it's gonna be fun. It's gonna be a good time.
Yeah.
I've worked with Dustin once, and I've worked with Jouban once or twice. So, and Helly, I've worked with too many times. Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I have like a kind of a six pack of topics I want to go through here, Chris. I kind of
Let's do
framed it
it.
that way just because there's a lot of things to hit on right now. So item one, this is not so much UFC, but I think it was kind of the news of the week, the announcement of Ronda Rousey versus Gina Carano in this MMA fight on Netflix. I haven't really had the chance to talk about it too much. This was something I heard about, you know, a couple months ago that they were working towards. Didn't know if it was going to be boxing, didn't know if it was going to be MMA, if it was going to be UFC or elsewhere, but we kind of have it out there now. Are you surprised to see Ronda Rousey coming back after 10 years and Gina Carano after 17?
I am surprised. I heard those rumblings too, and I just it just you know Gina Carano, when was the last time she fought?
2009, I think.
2009. Yeah, so that was the beginning of my professional career, and I'm considered an OG. That was the first year I had a pro fight. So she's a real OG. And Rhonda, what was her last fight? Like 2015, 16 or something?
Yeah, December 2016, I believe, against Amanda Nunes.
You know, I think they deserve it. I think they deserve that spotlight. They both are pioneers of the sport for women's MMA. They both did, you know, great during their times, and it's kind of like a fun fight. I think a lot of people are going to be interested in it. You know, I've seen some people really hate on it. I've seen like what Strickland said. You know, Ronda Rousey was a beast. You know, she crushed girls, and then you know she didn't finish off too strong. But we can't forget how great she was during her time, during her prime. And Gina Carano, the same thing. You know, like I don't know too much of like what Gina Carano really accomplished. I know she was in Strikeforce, I think, and I know
Couple
she was
Elite
more of a
FC fights.
striker. Oh, Elite FC.
Yeah, Elite FC, and then she fought, I think, twice in Strikeforce.
Okay. So I don't know much on her stats. I know she's a good striker. You know, it should be interesting. You know, she's had a lot of time off. Ronda Rousey didn't finish her career great. She's more of a grappler, so it seems like more of a striker versus grappling matchup. And yeah, I think it. Why not? Why not?
Yeah, I mean, I think the kind of the bigger point is like Netflix getting into MMA here, right? We've seen them do boxing and a couple of these fights, but you know, to see someone else pop up in the MMA world, I mean, we're not getting that too much these days. You know, if anything, it seems like the organizations are falling off, not popping up.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing for MMA. I think the more MMA promotions, the better for the fighters, you know, to have that. And more competition out there because the sport just keeps growing and the UFC isn't going to have everybody, you know, in their promotion. So I think the more, the better.
Yeah, and the one thing I mean that is kind of interesting going off this is like Ronda is seemingly already kind of poking her finger in the UFC's chest, right? I don't know if you saw her tweet about the numbers being like, we're gonna, you know, beat Netflix is gonna beat Paramount, which I mean, I would suspect they would given the difference in subscriber ratio and all that stuff. So
Yeah.
like, but just to kind of see her do that after saying we brought this to Dana, he wasn't interested. Like, if there's anything people can talk about Dana White's passion in 2026 about the UFC. This is the stuff that gets him fired up and always has been. So it was kind of an interesting tact, I think, for Ronda to try to take here.
Yeah, I was very surprised when I saw that fight, you know, being promoted. I was wondering if it was even real at first, and then you know, I was kind of wondering how Ronda Rousey was going to handle that. And for her to go on the offense against the UFC was definitely surprising because you know, I think she had a pretty good relationship with the UFC, especially Dana White. So I thought that I was definitely surprised that she came out of the gate swinging like that.
Yeah, and I'm curious, I guess, what will ultimately determine the success of this event too is what other fights they put on the card. Like, there's some guys floating out there. People talk about Nate Diaz, Anderson Silva. You mentioned him there. What do you think of the Anderson fight? Is it only boxing in your mind, or if they approach this for MMA, is that something that appeals to you at all?
Yeah, we'd have to get paid a lot of money. You know, I'd be interested, but it would have to be big. So we shall see what happens with that. You know, he knocked out Tyron Woodley. He called me out. We were supposed to box before that. We have a long history with each other, and I wouldn't mind putting it on him, you know, for old time's sake.
Would you rather do boxing over MMA at this point, when you talk about all the injuries and things like that? Like, does it seem much more approachable?
It would be a harder task, just as far as training with my body and everything, to do MMA. MMA would be, I would have way more advantages when it comes to fighting Anderson with MMA, but just getting to a training camp and everything would be the battle.
Yeah, well, we'll see how that goes and how they approach you. I guess the last thing on Ronda, I mean, you were there, you fought on UFC 175 with her when you fought Machida, and she fought, I think, Alexis Davis. Like, that was kind of the height of her popularity and powers. Like, can you recapture that, you think? Do you think all those people who cared about her then are still here? And I mean, I guess it's just so accessible that people, they might, Netflix markets it well and they'll tune in, but I don't know if this is something that has a longer lifespan beyond one fight.
Yeah, I would say the one fight is probably where it's at, but who knows? I do think she recaptures a lot of the people. I do think there are a lot of people that now dislike her in the MMA space with the way she handled herself with in the public eye with interviews and stuff like that after her first loss and then moving forward. So I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think that could be a good thing. You got people who hate you. You got people who love you. That's usually a recipe for success. So I still think she's going to be, something that people are going to be excited about, just because, you know, it's like nostalgia at this point.
Yeah, and it's a matter of how you promote the fight too. I don't know if they do this whole lovey-dovey, you're my hero, inspiration act all the way to the fight.
I agree. Like, I'm pretty sure we've seen Ronda promote fights well, you know, talk trash and get mean. I think we have to see that. She has to be the best. She has to play heel, because I don't think Gina Carano is doing that.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, let's get on to item two here. And this is the UFC Houston main event. Obviously, Sean Strickland's back.
I swore, by the way, I just got to tell you what I was thinking. When you said that, you know, the first one's not UFC related and, you know, it's a topic that's out there, I thought you were going Dan Hooker on that first one. I'm like, don't do this to me.
No, I think we'll let that one live. I don't really know what to say about that one.
Let's let that one play out for a little bit before we make any judgments.
I think so too. Well, on to UFC Houston. Sean Strickland and Fluffy, they just made weight a couple hours ago, first two on the scales here. Both looked pretty sucked out and drained, but that's always the case with those two. But I think they'll be ready to go by the time the fight gets here. Interesting one. I guess we have to start with Sean Strickland here, because he's the one who's been out for a year plus. He's making all the headlines. He's making all the claims about what he's going to do to Fluffy. I mean, what's your read on Sean Strickland, I guess, going into this fight so far, from what you've seen and what you've heard? And, you know, we can get to some of the controversial stuff, but I guess more so from where his mind is at on the fighting side.
You know, I the last time we seen him, I think, doubted this much was probably when he fought Adesanya, which is a good recipe for success for him, because he was able to shock the world in that fight and kind of outclass Adesanya. So I think mentally he's probably trying to go back to that space where he was at for that one, which is a good thing for him. I think it's a really tough matchup. I don't think Fluffy needs to change anything about him to win this fight. I think Fluffy just has to be himself and he could win this fight. I do think Strickland has to make some changes. You know, in his last couple of fights, like, he's been very reactive. You know, he walks forward, but he lets the other guy get off first. And then when he tries to reattack, he's just a little too slow, because, you know, he leans back, and by the time he comes back forward, because he stands so tall, he's just a little bit late on his counters. So I think he needs to get off first. He needs to take center of the octagon. He needs to be able to push him back. He needs to get his jab going, his teeps. What I think he really needs to focus on, I was talking to one of his coaches last night about it. If I was him, it would be crazy amount of teeps and body shots, because we've seen Fluffy get hurt before. And you got to find, you know, you got to find those weak points. Everybody has it. And, it, we've seen him get hurt, I think, multiple times to the body. So teeps to the body, body shots with punches, backing him up. And I think he really, if you're not stopping him with a body shot, I think he needs to be offensively wrestling, because Fluffy will push you back. You know, he will get past that jab. He is going to be quicker on the feet, I believe. He's got quicker hands, and I think he's going to be able to land shots, push Strickland back, and Strickland stands so tall up, he's going to get on the legs, you know. And he doesn't use 100% energy when he does it. He's probably about 60% when he gets on legs. He doesn't mind if you pull him back up. You know, he'll just go back down again. The way he measures energy in a fighter is top notch. It's elite. And but I've seen him get out wrestled offensively before. When someone goes on the offense on him, his defensive wrestling isn't great. His defensive jiu-jitsu isn't great. I've seen him mounted multiple times in fights. Even Brandon Allen, when they fought in, I don't know, CFC or one of the local shows before. And I can't remember in their last fight if Brandon Allen ever had him in trouble with Top Control or something. I remember Edmund Shabazian, he had him in trouble on top. He was on top of him, got to mount, went for like an armbar out of mount, lost control. So as good of an offensive wrestler as Fluffy is, you can't let him get in those positions, because he'll just wear you down. He'll get you down. He's going to keep progressing, moving forward from position to position. So if I was Strickland, I would be attacking the body and I would be going offensive with my wrestling. You have to control Hernandez. You got to slow him down. You got to bring him to the mat. You got to look to mount. You got to look to try to finish and control him from there, because the pace is going to be too high for Strickland to deal with, as good of, even though, you know, he's got great cardio and stuff, but you can't, defend over and over and over again without being too tired.
Yeah, I'm fascinated. That I feel like that's kind of the make or break of this fight, right? Where does Sean Strickland's wrestling, and him and everyone around him says it's really, really good. We just never see it. Like, he called this for this fight, I think in October when I interviewed him, he's like, I want Khamzat Chimaev, and the way I'm going to show I can beat him is I want the American Chimaev, as he put it, in Fluffy here. So like, I think he's seeing this as like the litmus test and to prove to all of us that, you know, Chimaev isn't going to just go out there and be able to out wrestle everyone. But I don't know, like I said, we haven't seen a ton of this in the fight. So like, from what you have seen, heard, like, is Sean Strickland's wrestling on that level if he goes out there and does all the things you kind of mentioned, whether it's offensively or is able to shut him down defensively? Like, with that,
I think he's big enough and strong enough and good enough to, if Edmund Shabazian could do it and Brandon Allen can do it, get him to the ground. And I think he's smart enough on top control, get to his positions and not make mistakes. And, you know, if you get to mount, you can finish the fight. And so that would, I think that's his best bet, to be honest.
Interesting. So, if Sean Strickland goes out there, he says he's going to win the grappling. If that ends up being the case, you're not going to be stunned.
I will be stunned because I will be stunned, but I just think that's his way that he has. That's the way I see him winning this fight. It's either he's stopping with a body shot, or you'd have to get him down to the ground and finish him on the ground or control him, you know. But I would be stunned because we haven't seen him do it before. And the other thing to think about is, if you haven't done something before, you're just not as comfortable doing it. You know, you could do it in sparring and all this stuff, but if you haven't done it inside the cage, you're taking a guy down, controlling him, you know, looking to pass guard, you know, we haven't really seen that as Strickland. So if he's able to do it one round, can he do it two rounds? You know, does he have to, I don't know if he's doing that for five rounds straight. I don't think he's I don't think he's doing the Chimaev to Fluffy for five rounds. I can't see that. It's just going to be too much. But he would have to finish him on the ground.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see how that'll go. And obviously a big fight in this division. I mean, is Fluffy, you know, if he goes out there and just runs through Sean and we see like a similar fight to what we've seen, would that surprise you at all? Like, is he that good? He called himself the boogeyman of this division at Media Day.
I think he's that good, man. He's that composed. He's that confident. He doesn't give a shit. He doesn't really watch fights. You know, he doesn't really know who Strickland is. You know, he's not bothered by anything the guy says. He's in there to just beat his ass and bring violence and just a crazy pace and try to mentally and physically break guys. And he is that good. I think if we look at where like the chinks in the armor, we went over it. Like, if you offensive wrestle him, it could be a problem for him. His body shots could be a problem. Jiu-jitsu off his back could be a problem. But what he does great is very hard to stop. Mm-hmm. You know, the forward pressure. I think his hands are really underrated too. I think he looks great on the feet before he even shoots for the takedown.
Yeah. So who are you ultimately leaning towards? Who do you think is going to win this?
I would lean towards Fluffy. Yeah.
Yeah. I picked him as well. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, and it's always just hard to know where Sean Strickland's mind is at, right? Like, another classic week here. Like, I'm sure Paramount is loving this. Is it one of their first fight weeks of this? I mean, I just opened X not that long ago, and like the top three things on my timeline are Sean Strickland beefing with Joachim Buckley about like racism stuff, Nasruddin Imabov firing back at him about whatever he said about him fighting Chimaev, and then Amanda Nunes responding to him about, you know, the stuff he said about women's MMA. Like, we've been dealing with this for a long time, and I think the UFC's stance about Sean Strickland has become pretty evident at this point. If they felt a certain way about this, he would have been gone a long time ago. But I wonder if any of this changes. Like, it was clear ESPN would follow the UFC's lead when it comes to this type of stuff. I don't know if Paramount feels any different or if they're going to operate the same way.
Yeah, I have no idea how they're going to handle it. He is a lot. Like, it's not like borderline. It's completely overline. You know, I appreciate people just saying what they feel, and I you know, all about, you know, the First Amendment, right? You know, free speech. But he definitely says some just outrageous things, and I don't know what you do with it. You just let him do it. I don't know. It's not my job. It's tough. You know, he's going to be one of those guys who either you love him or hate him, I guess. But if this is how he feels and he really thinks these things, you know, why not just let him say it? I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's a tricky one. Again, it's not our job to make those calls, but it's just fascinating to see the reaction. And, you know, like, people who, maybe because Sean hasn't been here in a year, who have not been exposed to this guy, now seeing him. And this is like, this has been one of the more controversial ones. Like, Toronto was pretty bad when he got into the exchange with another reporter about like the trans stuff. I was right there in that room. That was pretty intense. Yeah. And I think there's some shades there, but we'll see. I mean, obviously the people who want to see him get beat up might get their wish. And then if, like, he wins,
there's just some things you keep to yourself. Like, if it's true, like the Gina Carano thing that he's talking about, like, who says that on the mic? You know, like, a part of me loves him for it. The other part of me is like, are you out of your freaking mind? There has to be some type of layer of, you know, just thought before you speak, you know, and is this the right time to say this? You know, it's almost like whatever he's going to say in the locker room with his best friends or whatever, he's just going to say publicly and have no care in the world about it. And I guess good for him.
You're putting yourself on the radar, so we'll see how this all goes, and how it actually turns out in the fight wise. And I think that's item three I have here. I mean, how is this going to impact the 185 division and the title picture? As far as I know, Nasruddin Imabov versus Chimaev is not signed right now, and that would make me a little nervous if I was Nasruddin going into Saturday night. What do you think? Can the winner of this take it from him, or do you feel like it's only right to have Chimaev and Imabov next for this middleweight belt?
You know, it's all, you know, this is what happens, man. This is the game, you know, and, you know, you're the number one contender, and then all of a sudden a big fight happens. You still haven't signed. And if it's a shocking, you know, finish, if it's just a big statement, if Fluffy goes out there and completely dominates Strickland, and he just looks like he looked against Roman Dolidze, people are going to want to see him fight, probably, you know, and see him fight Chimaev and see what that would look like. And then also, Strickland's a huge name, you know, so Strickland goes out there and dominates Fluffy, we could see that same thing happening where he's fighting for the belt too. So nothing shocks me at this point. You know, it's kind of what have you done for me lately type of situation, and people have short-term memories, and that's kind of the way the game works.
Yeah. And I think, the fact that both these guys are Americans is probably to their advantage as well. I think the UFC wants to try to get as many Americans into these title fights as possible right now, because, American champions are lacking on the men's side. So if you have an opportunity,
and I guess with the White House card, you know, coming up as well, having Chimaev on there against an American would be pretty cool, you know? Yeah. So that could be in the cards as well.
Yeah. This White House thing, and we'll get to it in a bit. It's one of the topics, but like, maybe we're waiting on that, but all in all, like, Chimaev won the belt in August, nothing scheduled, nothing announced. I know, you know, Ramadan's going on, and he always said he was going to take that off, but like, you know, Dean Thomas famously said on this podcast, it's going to be a disaster if this guy wins the belt. And here we are, you know, 6 months into his reign. And
I thought he was wrong, man. I thought he was wrong. I love Dean Thomas. I told him that too. I was just thinking that when you were bringing this up before you even mentioned his name. But I thought he was wrong because Chimaev, you know, he had the sickness going on. He have maybe an injury. He just had a lot of crap going on. Maybe something with Chechnya. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But he had things going on, and I thought they were legit. And before that, when he just started in the UFC, he was fighting all the time. So I thought that's what we would get once we clear through all the sickness and all that crap. And he became champion, we'd have an active champion. But so far, it's not looking good.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we got something booked sooner than later here. And there's some other, you know, important middleweight fights coming up. Any of these two interest you? Israel Adesanya versus Joe Pyfer and Renier de Ritter versus Kyle Baraljo. Do you have much intrigue in either of those ones?
I mean, the Adesanya versus Joe Pyfer fight, that sounds very interesting. That's a big step up for Pyfer. You know, was he 14 and Adesanya is still top five? Or he's up
I think Adesanya is 6 and Pyfer's 14. Something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a tough one. Pyfer hits like a freaking truck, and Adesanya is a kickboxer, so they're going to be on the feet, and we'll see. You know, it's either we see vintage Adesanya keeping the distance and trying to, you know, picking him apart from the outside, or we see Pyfer just laying hands and, you know, possibly get a knockout. I think I like that matchup. And then would you say Baraljo and
who's RDR?
And RDR. Who did RDR just get beat by?
Brendan Allen.
Yeah.
But he was saying, you know, five weight cuts in less than a year. I was overtrained. I shouldn't have done that. All these things. Seems like he learned.
Yeah, let's go back. Let's go back and just think of the, you know, when you fought Bo Nickel. Let's think of that RDR versus Baraljo. I think that's another interesting fight. You know, yeah, should be good. I like the Pyfer for Adesanya fight a little bit better though.
Yeah. Do you think Robert Whittaker should move up to 205 or stick around in this division and try to make another run? He seems to be toying with this idea.
I like him at 205. Well, I did some TV work with him, and you know, he had told me that he was going to do that. He's big. He's like 235 right now. He's bigger than me. Dude used to be a welterweight. And why not? He'll be faster than these guys. There's not as much depth, I think, at 205. The guys in the top five are pretty scary. You know, which he knows, you know, this, like Yuri Brahaf's good. Like there's some guys that you probably don't want to be standing across from at that weight. But Whitaker's tough as hell. And if he's motivated, I think he could do some big things there.
For sure. Okay, let's blast through these final couple of topics here. UFC heavyweight division, a lot of focus on this weight class right now. Tom Aspinall dealing with all the eye stuff. When will he be back? Will he be back, if at all? You know, some rumors out there, maybe Alex Pereira moving up, maybe an interim or vacant title fight with Ciryl Gane. Seems to be a lot of chatter about that. Nothing announced. They just released Jailton Almeida, who is a top five guy. Gable Steveson got a big win last night, moving to 3-0 now. He seems to have a lot of, you know, excitement and hype attached around him. I don't know. Like, are you as low on the heavyweight division right now as a lot of people are? Do you see some silver linings, some points of interest here, like to kind of get this weight class back on track?
Well, is it all really stemming from heavyweight division got a lot of heat after the Tuivasa, and who did Tuivasa just fight?
Taliesin Teixeira,
who I thought was, you know, this up and comer that was a freak athlete who was going to crush everybody. And it didn't pan out with the Derek Lewis fight. And that fight, the fight was terrible. Talk about the depth of a division that it's not great. You need a spark there for sure. You know, John Jones, where's he at? You know, John Jones Pereira, I think is probably the biggest fight. I think that's probably the biggest fight, like a White House type thing. And then Cyril gone. I think Aspinall, we just got to kind of forget about at this point because who knows when he's back. You know, it sucks. It sucks what happened. But Cyril gone, you know, was accidental foul. He was just fighting for that championship. So he's going to have to, I don't know. I don't really know. I don't know who the hell's fighting who. Because even, you know, who knows? Who knows? You got Chimaev versus Pereira as a possibility too. So then Pereira stays down at 205. And then maybe John, and then who do you got John Jones with if John Jones is going to fight again? You know?
Yeah, I don't know.
You can't do Cyril Gane again. Aspinall's out of the picture. I don't know if there's another name up there that's exciting, you know, for
the next top ranked guy is like Alexander Volkov.
And that's yeah, we're good. We need Gable Stevenson quick.
Yeah, I mean, did you see the highlight of his fight? Or anything
I saw the highlight. I saw he got hit with like a spinning back kick. He wobbled a little bit, kept going forward, threw punches, and finished the guy. Guy looked like he was fighting for his life and knew it was going to be over and was just trying to land something big before it was over. So it was like a little sloppy. His last fight before that looked way more clean. You know, the way he exploded, I think it was a left hook into a beautiful takedown, and just the way he closed distance and was just next level, especially for being so young in the sport. This fight looked like, there's a little green. There's still a little green in there, which is to be expected. But, man, the sky's the limit for that guy, for sure.
Yeah, but you came into UFC at what, 4-0, I think you were?
4-0, yeah.
4-0, so that's one more fight for him. Like, different division, different time, middleweight.
The other thing is, though, like, I was fighting the best guys around in the country early on before I got into UFC 2, though. You know, like, there was no pad me fights, you know, where I'm just, you know, looking to, you know, get comfortable inside the octagon before I go into UFC. It was, you know, I fought Uriah Hall in my third fight. We were both undefeated. My fourth fight was a guy with, like, 20 fights, you know, really good record. So So I felt a little bit more prepared because I was fighting higher level guys. So when he does go to the UFC, the thing is with the heavyweight division, there is going to be guys that he fights that he's almost like, you know, padding your record again, like, which is just new stuff. Like even like the Bo Nickel thing, you kind of keep them away from certain guys and get them, you know, to a certain path. But he's going to have to get streamlined because the heavyweight division kind of needs him.
Yeah, and I think that's the scary part, right? Like, obviously, there's a lot of ambition and a lot of excitement, but man, we've seen this. You know, if you get put in there too soon, it can really set you back in your development.
Yeah, look at Aaron Pico. Aaron Pico was such a freaking beast wrestler. He was a Golden Glove champion. His hands were unbelievable. I think he lost his first fight. You know, like MMA is just like everyone always. You know, they always ask me like, hey, what do you think of this guy? You think he's gonna be a good fighter? It's like, but you never know. You could be a good fighter, but you could lose your first fight. And how do you deal with that? Now your chin is a little bit more suspect than usual. You know, poor Aaron Pico, man, I think his skill set's so good, but you know, I hate to even say it, but I kind of have to, like, is his chin there anymore? You know, he got knocked out too many times kind of early in his career. It just sucks to see because, you know, his potential was so high and he kind of was going against tough competition, maybe a little bit too early, you know?
Yeah. Totally agree. Yeah, it's a scary process.
It seems like it's a tough sport, but we have a guy from my gym in the Carolinas. This kid is so good, so talented. He goes out there and gets knocked out in like 15 seconds. You know, the kid throws a kick, and as he throws the kick, the guy just throws an overhand and boom, drops you a fight over. You know, like, and he's so skilled, he's so good everywhere, so athletic, and the fight game is a crazy game, man. You never know, and not always the better guy wins in this game, you know, and then you have to wait a while before you fight again. So you deal with the critics and maybe I'm not that good. The self-doubt, the confidence issues, there's just so much that goes on in this. So.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating insight. Okay. On to number five here, the White House, where things stand. Dana White says the card is done with two options here. I really don't know how this is going to turn out. The angle I wanted to hit on with you is, will we get Kayla Harrison's return against Amanda Nunes? Because she had this neck surgery, and I don't know if it's the same one you had or something slightly different, but like, is trying to come back after getting the surgery in early January and fight in June, is this way too ambitious?
5 months. I've had two neck surgeries. So one was a discectomy where they basically just go in there and clean up the herniation and pull it out. And they sew you back up. It's almost like a knee scope, maybe a little bit longer because it's your neck, but it's, you know, 2 months and you're pretty much good. The artificial disc was pretty non-invasive as well. It gives you full mobility. It's not like a neck fusion. So if she got it fused, I think that's like a 6-month thing. If she got the artificial disc, I remember being ready to spar like 8 weeks, but I wasn't allowed to spar maybe until 12 weeks. And I felt fine, you know? So I have more issues throughout my whole career with the one I had the discectomy on because it just re-herniated immediately. I wish I had an artificial disc in there done. Because I still have like nerve issues and stuff in my arm and neck hurts and stuff. But if it's an artificial disc, she could definitely be ready to go.
Okay.
Because you could do all types of training, like sparring and wrestling. You just got to be careful first 3 months. But she could have, you know, you could be, you know, exercising and staying in shape and stuff. So she'd be fine.
If they end up landing, if it's Ilya Topuria versus Justin Gaethje as the main event of this, does that satisfy you, or do you think it has to be a Conor McGregor or a Jon Jones, or with Ilya, who clearly has the most long-term future of any of those names, right? He is the next guy. He is the guy the UFC can promote for the next 5 years, not the next 5 months or just one fight like Conor or Jon might be. Like, is that the direction you should go, even though
people
might not be like, hey, there's no Jon Jones or McGregor on this?
Yeah, if it was me, which it's not, I would love to see like a Jon Jones, a Conor McGregor, all the biggest names on there. Topuria and Gaethje, yes. But I think just for the most eyes and visibility and making it just a huge event to have those monster names on there, if it's feasible, that's kind of what the expectations are at.
Yeah, I'm very curious because sitting here right now and things can change, things can go wrong. I'm not reporting anything. I don't think Conor or John or Alex Pereira might be on this White House card, which would be interesting.
You don't think there will be?
I don't think either of those three will be fighting, but I may be proven wrong. We will see.
Yeah.
I've heard some other stuff might be in the works for Conor. So we'll see. We'll see what they do there. I don't want to spill the beans, but we'll get there.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Last thing, and this is ending it on a happy note. I feel like this was, I guess, the best news of the week for us as an MMA community. Cain Velasquez getting out on parole. I saw you send a tweet about it. This has been something we've been following for a few years, a big story. And I guess given all the circumstances, this probably turned out as best as it could for Cain and his family.
Yeah. It's just such a nightmare situation. Cain is probably one of my favorite fighters, one of the guys I was inspired by watching his style. I always wanted to kind of be like him, his cardio, his nonstop pace, his ability to strike, boxing, kicks, and also takedowns and just wear on guys mentally and physically. I loved everything about his style, and he inspired me a lot. So I just love that dude, quiet, you know, not a trash talker, just went out there and did his thing. And to see, to hear what happened to his son, and you know, the guy was getting let out and he ends up, you know, shooting the wrong guy and all this stuff. Everyone could put themselves in his shoes and you could think you would have done things smarter. But I guess unless you're in a situation like that, which you pray and hope that you're never in that situation, it's like you can't judge him. And I hated that he even had to spend a day in jail for that. I wish there was just a better system to make sure guys like that don't exist.
Yeah, totally. No, well said. Yeah. And we'll see if he continues to be involved in the sport or anything. I mean, this is tongue in cheek, but you could probably beat some of these heavyweights even right now after all this time.
Let's bring Cain back for the White House card. That would be sick. Cain Velasquez versus Jon Jones.
Let's do it. That'd be awesome.
Saying that on the desk today. Better not post this yet.
Yeah, no, I will. We'll give it a little time. And just to close it out on UFC Houston, what else? We talked about the main event. Is there anything else on this card that kind of has your appeal? We got 100 grand Dan Ige now against Melky Costa. Jeff Neal, who's apparently cleaned up his life a lot and was dealing with a lot of stuff. Some drug addiction issues, and I think that's probably it for me, just given he's fought, go look at his record, he's been fighting the best guys time after time after time. Juris Medic,
hey, where are you going? I'm almost done. Sorry.
Yeah, Juris Medic kind of a step down, but anything else you're screaming to you? Jacoby Smith, a great prospect.
Jacoby Smith is someone I'm definitely interested in seeing. I don't know if he was a one or a two-time All-American. I keep wanting to look that up in Oklahoma State, but beast wrestler. He's been looking really good. The Nico Price fight, though, it got a little scary, man. Nico Price is a little – he's a gamer. Showed, you know, he got a little tired there, but he's super explosive, athletic. He looked pretty well-rounded. So he's definitely a top prospect. Excited to see him. The Jeff Neal thing, his story is unbelievable. Almost dying basically 5 years ago, then got addicted to drugs and alcohol, cleaned himself up. He's at like 100 days now sober. Talked to his coach last night, safe, and he was saying he looks like the old Jeff. He looks better than ever. And so I'm excited to see him go out there, you know, to be able to still be in the top 10. I think he's top 10 after, you know, being addicted to drugs and alcohol for the last 5 years. It's pretty impressive. So it's going to be exciting to see what he could do once he was able to get to the other side of that problem.
For sure. Awesome, Chris. Well, this has been great insight. I very much appreciate it. Everyone can see you on the desk, pre-fight, post-fight, all this stuff. Appreciate you making a little bit of time, man, after all your travels. I'm going to take a quick break, and I'll be right back to wrap things up. And that does it for another edition of the Bonfire Podcast. Thank you so much to Chris for his time and going through all those topics with me. It means a lot, especially as he has a chaotic day there in Houston getting ready for the ceremonial weigh-in coverage. And of course, as he noted, no clothes, just having to push through this one over there after all the travel delays and all those things that he mentioned, but took the time to be here. And I could not be more grateful to him and could not be more grateful to all of you out there for listening to the show. As I said, my apologies for having something a little bit late, but a lot going on here, and we'll have something a little more consistent coming up, I hope, here, and something earlier next week, as usual, that you can expect on all the platforms. So thank you to everyone for tuning in. If you're watching this, please make sure to like, rate, subscribe, follow, comment, all those different things. Same with on the audio platforms. Means a lot as we try to get more exposure around this show, and could not appreciate all the loyal followers who have been here all along up until this point. So we have a new setup here. We're going to be doing things a little bit different. I have some good ideas coming up for some upcoming shows here. So bear with me on that. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy UFC Houston. And until next time, I will see you all back here by the Bonfire.